You're listening to Kiss My Aesthetic, your go-to podcast for brag-worthy branding, marketing, and entrepreneurship advice. I'm your host, Michelle Winterstein of MKW Creative Co. Let's dive into the episode. Greetings and welcome back to the Kiss My Aesthetic podcast. This is like a meeting of the minds, an emergency episode. We are in the Situation Room right now with two very, very regular guests of the podcast. Welcome, Ashley, and welcome, Amber.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Amazing. Well, as you know from the title of this episode, we are going to talk about the TikTok ban. If you guys don't know Amber and you don't know Ashley, please go find their other episodes of the podcast. We'll link them in the show notes. But maybe Ashley, Amber, you guys could each give us like a sentence about yourself and what prompts you as an expert or passionate person about the topic. Ashley, why don't you go first?
Yeah. Hi, guys. I run Dial Zero Marketing, which is a marketing agency focused on kind of creating connection through community. It's kind of the focus of how we've ran all of our social strategy. We work with a ton of celebrities. We work with product brands. We work with small business owners, startups, etc. And a lot of what we are seeing is obviously concern about the TikTok ban, as a lot of our clients rely on it for their source of revenue and for their community and for their mainstay of all of their content. So, you know, we are definitely well equipped to have this conversation as we are trying to navigate ourselves, like what are the different routes that we can take? And I'm excited to kind of share my thoughts on things.
Amazing. Amber, let us hear it.
Yes. Hey, everyone. My name is Amber Figlow, and I'm a content strategist who focuses primarily on like content repurposing, workflows, and like efficiency and helping you show up and create content consistently online. And kind of what defines me, I guess you would say, as a TikTok expert, I was one of the first to market back in like 2020 during the pandemic for this type of content. So I grew fairly rapidly, and it's been an interesting and wild ride on TikTok over the last 4 years. I know, Michelle, you can kind of attest to that too. Like you and I were in the similar boat, same time. So it's been interesting to see the development of this whole TikTok thing.
And I think obviously the stuff that's got everyone concerned right now is the potential TikTok ban. I do have some notes that I've kind of pulled through of what makes this ban different than the last time there were like rumblings of it going away. And the biggest kind of controversy of the whole thing is the data ownership and data privacy, considering that TikTok, aka ByteDance, is owned by a Chinese company and it's not an American-owned company. I know that you guys both have had some thoughts about that right out the gate, because there's a little bit of a double standard happening here if we're considering social media and data. Amber, why don't you take this one? Explain to us why that feels a little bit like an interesting argument considering the social media landscape.
Absolutely. So for me, and listen, you guys, this has happened year over year. Since we all saw like the fruition of TikTok, we've seen it go through Congress. We've seen all of them try and ban this year over year. So just so that this is not new, even if it is newer to you, like kind of hearing this. So for me, it is one of those things that is hard to go about this like data corruption. What are they doing with our data when all these other social media platforms own our data and sell our data? They are already doing it, and they are American-based companies. Think of the Metas, think of the X's. There have been lawsuits, and not just with social media, but just a lot of apps in general, you know? So it's like, it's not new, this whole data corruption thing. It's just, it feels a little icky because it's not this quote unquote American-based company. So that's kind of my standard on it. I'm like, it's a double standard. We're already seeing it with these other companies. Like why all of a sudden, I mean, I have my reasonings why I think they're going for this company in particular. But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Ashley, where does this fall in line between the Meta of it all? Like the monopoly versus kind of what came in as the underdog, and how that's disrupted the space. Like we're all around the same age, so we've seen rise and fall of plenty of platforms, MySpace, even Snapchat. Is it a thing? Is it not a thing? How does this TikTok instance feel different than kind of the, you know, launch or onset of new apps and then the fade out?
Well, I think the thing is that I think what we're noticing is the keyword emblazonment. You know, there's a lot of trigger words involved in the TikTok ban, even the word ban, even the word TikTok. And I think that what it does, data selling, you know, all CCP, it's all very trigger heavy. And to me, whenever I notice a lot of triggers being involved, I wonder why. What is the emotion we're trying to evoke? What are we trying to stoke the fire? because we don't necessarily notice those things, to your point, with Meta, with Google. You know, you shop online, your data is being sold. But, you know, what's interesting is that I think that people are using the CCP advantage of, like, you know, it's China is getting our info and China this. And it's like, but all of our manufacturing is in China. And I know the question was kind of like, how do we view the rise and fall? But for me, I think it's more important to also view this from a bird's eye view and kind of wonder where the money is. And in the United States, Facebook has so much money and they can infiltrate government. They can be involved in a certain extent. And so obviously they're going to come in and try to fight this at all odds to make sure that everything stays American. And they're going to scare people in the way that they know how to scare people. You know, what are all the trigger words that they can use? And so as like we talk about rise and fall, you know, a lot of people are talking about how TikTok is kind of becoming oversaturated with shopping and kind of oversaturated with commission sales and sponsorships. And to me, when I saw that, I saw they're saving up, they're making money because they're going to have to fight this. And they're going to have to fight this with the dollars we're spending on TikTok shop on my little phone case that I got for $2. So for me, like the rise and fall does always happen, whether or not it gets bought by someone US, whether or not they stay, you know, in China and the bill doesn't pass, or, you know, whatever the case, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But I think it puts everybody in the United States in this really unique position where we have to take a bit of ownership over where we place our time and where we vote with our time and where we vote with our dollar, because you do those things. And viewing all of our activities as in support of or against any sort of ideologies, goals, commitments, etc. So I do think that, you know, everything has the ability to rise and fall. Maybe TikTok is completely obsolete in 2 years. That would make me really sad. But, you know, maybe Facebook is too. We really have no idea.
So true. And the fat disclaimer I meant to say at the top of this whole episode is that, like, as Americans, we have so many things we'd rather see our government focus on than banning TikTok. And the fact that this is the thing that's been pushed all the way and it has bipartisan support from people that, frankly, don't use the app is absolutely bewildering when we have things like ceasefires, homelessness crises, like housing market issues, healthcare, women's rights,
inflation.
Like, are you joking me? So like that really, let's start the conversation there of like, it's so annoying that we're even having to have this conversation from a government standpoint. But given that we're social media marketing girlies, this is like where we're coming at because we have some more insights than the average consumer. I think the other part of this that really is got people in like a total whirlwind is the people who have made their income and made their presence through this platform. So let's think about that person. Let's think about the small business owner. Let's think about the indie brand that's just getting started that had like a meteoric rise thanks to TikTok. It's a lot of the beginning of my business and scaling my agency came from this platform and the reach that you could get that we just weren't getting on Instagram. So maybe Amber, start with kind of your suggestion to that person who saw this news and immediately went into panic mode.
Yeah. So I want to kind of take it back, give a quick anecdote here, because I want people to understand how impactful TikTok is as a social media marketing platform for small business owners. So back in 2020, I think I had, you know, it was like very beginning of the pandemic. I had maybe $1,500 left in my bank account. Like it was looking scarce. So I knew I had to jump in and fully dive into TikTok because I was like, I'm desperate at this point. And it was one of those things. It truly skyrocketed my business overnight. You know, luck is involved, strategy, skill. I've been doing this for a very long time. So I don't want everybody to expect that to happen for their business. But just know that my story is not unique. You know, it happened for a lot of small business owners, especially in a time of where's our money going to come from? So just know that this platform really has given back to us tenfold. So moving forward, it's really difficult to say like what we can do. From my perspective, get your content off of there as best you can. If you are creating content on TikTok, make sure you're downloading it. If you got to use SnapTik or some other kind of crazy app, get your content off the platform and make it a part of your regularly scheduled like daily activities on TikTok is having that content somewhere else, number one. Number two, continue to use the platform. It's not banned right now. It's not banned tomorrow. So I want to tell, you know, those smaller businesses that are finding their rise on TikTok, continue using it and start to prompt your community to find you elsewhere. That's going to feel icky. It might not get you the traction and engagement on those style of posts or in your stories or whatever that looks like for you on TikTok, but start migrating people over there. Make sure you get that email list sign up. in the link in your bio if you have that option on TikTok. So start to funnel people in other places, but continue to use the platform. It hasn't gone away yet. And that's the biggest thing I keep telling people. I'm like, this is a scare tactic. We don't know what's going to happen. Just continue on until it actually happens. And I know that sounds frou-frou and like, oh, you're so hopeful. I'm not hopeful. Let's be honest. I'm just trying to give you tactical information here.
Because there's a chance that nothing happens, right?
Correct.
There's a chance that it just continues as usual or, you know, gets acquired by someone else and it still exists or gets improved upon. Ashley, on the client-facing side, how are you helping clients navigate this and explain to them, okay, this is why we have a multi-prong marketing strategy?
Yeah, well, something that I have to credit Tiffany Chaplin, who is a client of mine, something that I've taken from her as just such a genius way to view social is that social media is the house you rent and email is the house you own. Email, website, etc. So above all, anyone who comes into our space, we tell them, you need to be on email, you need to be on email, you need to be on email. And I think it's kind of just doubled down the aspect that when we said that, we meant it, because you get to your point, Amber, you know, build up a reservoir of all of those people who are trickling in. And there's creative ways to do this. So one thing that I try to recommend to people to kind of piggyback on Amber's suggestions is to create what we call like a circular reference. So by saying things like, you know, I went into more detail on Sunday's email about that, or like sign up for the email and I'm going to share step 4 and 5, or sign up for the email and that's where I'm going into detail because I'm not doing it here. So like also breadcrumbing a bit so that you can make sure that you are building up that piece, those email signups. But, you know, from a client perspective, one of the other things that we're recommending to other businesses is create a repurposing upsell for low, you know, maybe for every one post you put up, add to an archive 5 past posts, offer an opportunity for repurposing to other platforms. YouTube Shorts has been relatively successful for different people in different ways. Take those TikToks and every time that you post some in the archive, but also post them on YouTube Shorts. So I think that we're also going to see different platforms kind of rise to the occasion. Also, YouTube has been waiting for its moment. And I think YouTube has seen a major resurgence as we see long form video coming back in a major way. So I really think it's more like, instead of all of this happening to us, if this is happening, how do we react to it?
I think that's a super solid point. And it's made me want to kick back up my old series. I had something similar happened with my brand design in 60 seconds videos, right? Like these were the things I was known for. This was my formula. This worked so well on TikTok. But the first time I ever recorded one, I'm like doing it all in one take with my handheld phone, shaky background, like sitting on my bed with my 2019 iPhone. Like the tech is better. My presentation style is better. So even use this as an opportunity to be like, well, maybe we can kick back this thing up from the beginning, right? And then hit a YouTube short strategy, hit a reel strategy where it's like, we're going to take this formula that we know works and worked over here and rework it or redo it in a 2024 kind of way. So that could be another way to think about your content of like, if you've learned something and you know something could happen again, could pop off again, why not take what you've learned to that other platform? Amber, you've been preaching this for a long time with the content repurposing. So tell us a little bit about what that means for someone who's like overwhelmed or they're, you know, a one person show running their business. They're like, okay, what the heck is all of that? And how do I take what has worked in one spot and put it in other spots in a way that fits? Because I feel like you're not necessarily advising people to just take exactly what was on TikTok with the TikTok watermark over to something else, correct?
Yeah, correct. So in case you guys are not familiar with my whole strategy, literally my entire content strategy is repurposing. So I take a YouTube video, I break it down for literally every single platform. So that's kind of my world and my space. But yeah, so the way that I like to coach people on this, we want to repurpose those videos. We want to put them other places. But the thing you have to remember is that each platform has its own nuances, culture, and formatting. So what I always recommend to people, kind of what I've had fun with lately, I gotta say, TikTok, it does have the best native in-video like content creation experience created in TikTok. Totally fine. Do not add text yet. Do not add trending audio. Download that video, like whatever it is you created, so that you can take that raw format and then you can go add it to Instagram Reels with native Instagram Reels text, with native Instagram audio, because the audios trend differently on both platforms. Or you can take that and, like you said, put it on YouTube Shorts with, again, just different text and finding the culture fit, Because I don't know about you guys, but when I try and take like an Instagram reel and put it on TikTok, people call me out in the comments. I'm like, oh God, they're coming for me. So it's just knowing those cultural differences between the platforms. You know, it's one of those things. It's just one quick little step in your content creation process and in your content workflow to make that content work harder for you. So again, as we're taking that content off TikTok to put into other places, just keep those things in mind. It doesn't have to be overly complex. You don't need to bring the video into like Premiere Pro or all these crazy things. Just natively do it in the platform. So that's my quick little advice there.
Ashley, you're nodding along. I know that you've given yourself a little bit of a Reels challenge this quarter, this start to the new year. Talk to us about that experience of just not being so precious about your content. I think there's this idea that like everything has to be super manicured, super highly produced when like you're talking about, like that's not really the culture of these platforms anyway. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So what we've adopted is like a 4-to-1 brand to sales posting cadence. And the reason for that, one, I just have to caveat, our brand is very strategically built around messy play. So it works advantageous to us because we're not trying to be buttoned up. We're not trying to be like perfect and manicured, right? So for us, I think it's also a little bit easier. Just keep that in mind. But so one thing that we're trying to do is just really kind of like fly by the seat of our pants a little bit. You know, we do have obviously some reels and some video content that requires a bit of editing. For instance, when we post podcast clips, we want to make sure that it's easy to follow and that it's, you know, well edited. But there are times that I will be cooking dinner and I'll have something to say. And instead of making a story, I'm just going to record it in reels in one long video and then just chop, chop, chop. So there's not a single break and post it on the spot. And I'll tell people that, you know, I'll say, yeah, I just made this while I was cooking. And, you know, did you actually post it in the moment or did you schedule it? No, we didn't schedule it. We just posted it. And the reason for that is because I do think that Instagram, TikTok, any short form content really is impactful. But I don't think individual posts are. And I think that the impact is made in the consistency over time. And that if I post 100 videos where 6 of them are impactful, I'm going to be doing much better than someone who posts 6 videos that are impactful over the same amount of time. What we're noticing is like these inside jokes that tend to come up just super organically along the way are actually so connective. It's funny, I have them right here. I had a really terrible year where I lost 6 AirPods. And I brought people along for the ride where I was like, I lost my AirPods again. And thankfully that was years ago and I've not lost them since. But if I do find my case and like, they're not in here, you know, I might post it on my stories and say, I've done it again. Where are they? And it's become a big inside joke. Now that might not feel like something that makes me money, but we're friends now and we have an inside joke. Those types of conversations, those types of content will convert because you have a closeness with the audience and they can actually see you. That is a vulnerability that doesn't really cost me anything. I'm not telling you about something traumatic. I'm not telling you about something I'm working through or that happened to me. I'm just telling you I lost my AirPods. And so it's a really great way to kind of think about content less as like, I'm going to bear all and everything has to be massively important. Think of it more like just calling your best friend every day. They're not going to be impactful conversations, but when you need that impact, it's already baked in.
I think that begs the question of like, are you building community or are you building followers?
Right.
Because I think a lot of people think that building followers is building community and the two things are not the same. I know people with over 100,000 followers that make $0 a year. And I know people with 2,000 followers that are making close to $1 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's that shift as well. I think this also gets into like the Web 2 versus Web 3 conversation of yes, TikTok was great for so many small business owners because it gave you that virality and it gave you the opportunity to get high visibility with low following, but that didn't necessarily sustain. So Amber, we've talked about this on podcast episodes before about when clients say like, I just want it to go viral. I know Ashley, you've dealt with this with clients as well, where they want every post to go viral. And if it doesn't go viral, they want it taken down. But that's hurting the idea of community, right?
Yeah. So for me, first and foremost, if you guys are in my ecosystem, in my world, I preach that you don't want to go viral. I promise you, it is more headache than you think it is worth. Not only logistically as a business owner, especially if you're product-based, but also the mental health toll that comes with it. And that's one of those interesting conversations specifically about TikTok. But yeah, so for me, the thing is, I love the point that you made, Ashley, about how you'd rather have those 100 videos consistently posted, let's say it's over 6 months, and have 6 that are impactful. and not necessarily viral. We don't need millions of views, but let's say they get more than average. Like, that is so good. Maybe it brings you a good chunk of new followers that you could potentially turn into a community. But Michelle, you and I have had this conversation before, is I pigeonholed myself on TikTok for years of being content Canva queen. And I was like, I got to get away from this shit. I'm like, I'm not making money doing this. Yes, it's bringing me followers, but it's not bringing me community. So I've had to kind of flip it on its head. My Canva tutorials would go viral. And then I had no product to sell. I was booked out with clients. I'm like, what am I doing here? So it's one of these things, when you're bringing this TikTok followers, this community, when you're trying to bring it to another platform, just always keep that in mind, that you need to have these touch points past these viral tutorials, these viral reels, these viral whatever, and that virality is not everything. And we'll be okay without that TikTok virality. I promise you, it's going to hurt you more than you think it's going to help.
Well, and that's where we're seeing so many TikTokers get off of TikTok and offer something else. Start a podcast, do a web show, have a product baseline, like diversify, 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 because anyone who has had that meteoric rise has realized, like, wait a second, I cannot put all my eggs in this basket. Ashley, are you seeing that as well?
Well, I'm seeing that as well. And I also want to have like a little bit of an interesting thought about this, that I think the TikTok ban is one of the worst things for Facebook.
True.
And the reason why I think so is because TikTok's algorithm works very well. And if we have a place that the algorithm works very well, we don't rely on Instagram to do that for us, right? We can nurture there. We can show up a bit more authentically because it's not going to be shown to the audience anyway. And so by losing out, well, first of all, we've already lost out on Twitter. We've already lost out on Twitter. People are already shifting over to Threads. They're doing a pretty good job of accepting that audience. I think people are still on Twitter, but, you know, people are migrating over. But if we lose out on TikTok altogether, you know, we miss out on musicians, we miss out on creators, we miss out on the connection of just the everyday consumer connecting with each other. And the people who have grown or are starting to grow or have seen massive growth are going to go up to Instagram, and they're going to demand that algorithm be better. We're already seeing demands on Instagram to make that algorithm actually work, because we all know that it's very broken. It is not at all built for the consumer in order of growth and scalability. So when TikTok, if and when TikTok does get banned or goes away, Facebook is in a really bad position. So they need to be very prepared with either an algorithm that's going to work, or somebody else is going to have the unique opportunity to swoop in and do something similar. And who knows who they're going to be owned by? And then we're back to square one.
Hilarious story to that note about the Facebook algorithm. My sister and I both have our businesses, and then we have our business Facebook page. And when you open Facebook, first of all, the user experience of trying to toggle between your business page and your personal page, especially if you run multiple brand accounts, horrible. But my sister's business page, for some reason, her feed algorithm now only shows her like AI images of ripped Jesus. We're not religious at all, but she's in Texas and she's always in and around churches because she's a wedding planner. And so now she gets these photos of like AI photos of Jesus rescuing people from like a burning airplane, and he's like washboard abs. It's just ridiculous.
So funny.
And there's like sharks jumping out of the water. And she's like, how did this end up on my feed? But it's so true, right? Like, I recently just went through my Facebook algorithm of my business page and started like doing the dot, dot, dot. Show me less of this. Show me more of this. And now my whole thing is just Italian properties for sale, because that's what I like to see. So, but again, the fact that you have to manually tell Facebook what to show you shows you how broken it is. Here you have all the information about me. You have all the demographics. You have all the stuff. You know what I interact with on Instagram. You're all owned by the same parent company, and you still can't show me things that I would be interested in. You still can't show me the artist that's in their studio, like Lindsay Cherikwaller. I think about her all the time because I found her through TikTok, and her story is so cool and her artwork is so cool, and I bought her artwork. Natalie McMillan, like people we've had on the podcast, Joe Johnson Overby. Like, these are people that came to me through TikTok because I was served their content, and then everything that they do was so aligned with what I believe that I think that we are missing out on that. We are going to miss out on that if something doesn't take its place. And it's so true that the Instagram algorithm is so broken, because the whole thing is just the most picture perfect salesy. Like, you know, my sister made a comment the other day about how even if someone shows you like romanticizing your life, it's an ad. You're making an advertisement. You're not really showing reality, you're showing highlight reel, right, Amber?
Yeah, definitely. And one other like quick nuance to this too, because this is such a fascinating conversation. I am a sucker for a comment section. So what I've been reading and what I've been seeing especially too is like especially, you know, I'm in my 30s and I know Instagram is always going to be my baby. I will still always be on Instagram no matter what as a consumer. But a lot of Gen Z and a lot of the younger generation, they say if TikTok gets banned, they are deleting all Meta stuff. And I'm like, that's another problem that they're not understanding. With this ban, they're not going to get this influx of like reach and new users. I'm like, if anything, it might go down. We'll see. That's just my prediction.
I would love that.
So it's just interesting to see. I wouldn't mind. I'm like, that's fine by me. I love seeing that cultural shift. And they need to start listening to users, you know, that kind of thing too.
Totally true.
You know, and Snapchat's really having its moment. We have a lot of clients that are having conversations with Snapchat, and Snapchat's paying an exorbitant amount of money for people to move over there and to keep creating short form content. Like, they are being smart. I don't know if they've necessarily cornered like the millennial market, but they have boomers. Boomers are for sure on Snapchat in a major way, in a way that is so wild to me. And they have Gen Z. And so, you know, Snapchat may be infiltrating the market, or maybe somebody new takes over. Maybe Reddit becomes bigger. Maybe Substacks become more important. Like, we could just see a shift altogether that short form content goes away the way that it came in really hot. I think it's going to be really fascinating, but it does break my heart because we have people like Noah Kahan, incredible musician. He like is one of the fastest rising musicians that I've seen ever come to fame. And it's because of TikTok. Madison Beer. You know, there's so many other people who are gaining so much.
Sabrina Carpenter.
Yes, Sabrina Carpenter. Taylor Swift. You know, everybody live streaming her concerts, not on Instagram, but on TikTok. Like, it's good for so many different categories. But I also have like a bit of a tinfoil moment. Sorry to cut off your like flow, Michelle. I have such a tinfoil hat moment, conspiracy theory, that like, it's just very fascinating to me that women found a way to make big, big money without being on Wall Street. And here we have a place where you can make money with a baby on your hip, making dinner, and you can make six figures. You can make $1 million. And isn't it just like kind of frightening that the people who want to shut it down are the people in government? And I think that we're in a really big revolution where women are able to say, your way didn't work. And we tried your way since this, you know, the dawn of time. And we're now doing our own thing. And we're actually talking amongst ourselves, and we're having discussions about what we want for this country. We're having discussions among ourselves what we want in our marriages and in our friendships and in our communities. And people don't like that. And I think what we're noticing is that women are rallying and they want to shut it down.
Oh, completely agree.
Because Twitter is such a male demographic. Instagram is a female demographic, but they have us controlled, right? And so to me, I just have a bit of like a conspiracy theory around the fact that like, it's just fascinating that everybody else can sell data. But the place that women are really seeing millions of dollars of success from, quote unquote, doing nothing, but actually doing what is so intentional and strategic, is something that drives me to absolute hysteria and anger.
I mean, but that's exactly the point. I mean, it's because women we're building communities, are we not? Look what we're doing right now. Like, this is the whole, and I learned it from TikTok, bike face phenomenon. Did you hear this?
No.
I reposted it a few days ago, but it was a TikTok video talking about when the bicycle was invented, also was invented a medical condition called bike face. And only women suffered from bike face. And the symptoms were you had a clenched jaw, squinty eyes, like you looked menacing. And that it was a way to deter women from getting on bicycles so they wouldn't ride to meet each other to talk. Only women suffered from bike face. And it was published. And it was a way to say, we don't want you guys putting your brains together, chit-chatting together, gossiping. Can we talk about the idea of gossip?
That was the one I was going to bring up.
Yep. I was going to bring it up too. We all are on the same wavelength.
Literally. With the Kate Middleton of it all this week, this is how women exchange information. This is how women have existed. And to break the boundaries of that, of you're not confined to your physical street and your location, but that we get to talk to each other from all over the US, from all over the world, and learn from each other. Like, the whole political activism side of TikTok is fascinating to me, and how we're able to see like first person POV accounts of tragedy is insane, because I don't consume the news.
And marriage.
Totally.
You know, kind of wild that like people who are very pro traditional family are, hey, your husband's cheating on you. He was talking about it next to me in the airplane. Or hey.
Yup. On the airplane. I saw that one yesterday.
Yeah. Or hey, I wish I didn't get married because I have to clean up after my husband. Or, hey, it's okay if you don't have kids and you're in your 30s. You know, there's just like a bit of like a normalization of like women truly supporting women. And trust me, TikTok can be a cesspool of hate also.
And misinformation as well.
100%. But what I've seen is truly just like more meetings of the minds, more women coming together and being able to really say like, I've got you, I can help you, I want to do this, and rallying behind people to show different lifestyles. People don't like that.
And to support one another and uplift one another. And I think that we, all three of us, are the positive case study for TikTok. Amber, you're nodding your head along to this. Now we're really fired up, all of us, because I don't think it's a conspiracy at all, Ashley. I think that those are very aligned thoughts.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And then to kind of round this out, I don't know if you guys have seen the kind of the hatred that Jeff Jackson is getting. Have you heard of Jeff Jackson? So that, I think he's a Congress member. I don't know exactly where he sits, but he got his rise as a politician on TikTok. Like, he rallied and that was his whole campaign, and he voted on the TikTok ban. And I'm like, dude, do you think we're stupid? So I think this other sense of we're kind of peeling back the curtain as well, especially as women, we're like calling people out on like the hypocrisy of it all. And that's a great place on TikTok too. Like, we're not going to listen to that just because it was put up on Fox News or CNN or whatever. We are literally unveiling it. And I've learned so much from other women and other creators on the app that I never would have understood the nuances of some of these conversations. And I'm just like seeing the different perspectives, because we're always in our own little world, shielded by whatever we've got. But I'm like, it is so fascinating, even if I don't fully agree with you, but listening to the nuances of conversations too is fascinating on TikTok. And those are the conversations they don't want us to be having. So it's very interesting.
At the end of the day, it's about conscious consumerism, right? And we talk about conscious consumerism as vote with your dollar, buy products, buy brands that you believe in because you believe in their story, you believe in the impact that they're making on the world, but also be conscious about what you consume on social media. I love to see the other point of view. I love to, you know, entertain the discourse of someone that disagrees with me, because it will either open my mind up to them or it will help me figure out, why do I believe this? Why do I feel so strongly about this thing? And how can I take what someone else is feeling, validate them, but still hold my truth at the same time? And I think that that's something a lot of people miss when it comes to social media, is that, of course, things that are controversial are going to get traction because they are controversial. And the algorithm at the end of the day doesn't know if it's good comments or bad comments. It just knows that they're comments, and it knows that there's discourse, and it knows that people are fired up. So I think, as creators and consumers of the platform, knowing that they're using and selling our data, is we get to decide, we get to curate which communities we want to participate in. And I think that that's something that we've seen with TikTok more than other platforms. And I think that that's something that would be a gaping hole should it go away, right? Like, yes, email list, yes, Substack, yes, YouTube, yes, Meta, maybe. But where else can we foster that kind of conversation? Like, Ashley and I met each other on Clubhouse. That was a hot thing for a minute. And then what happened, you know? So Ashley, how are you considering your own consumption of social media should this TikTok thing go away?
Man, I mean, I don't even know if I've gotten to that place. To be honest, I don't think it's going away. I think that it is an election year and people like to rise up people's emotions and scare people. I think worst case scenario, it gets bought by a US company or an adversary, and it changes a little bit. I would bet money it's never going to go away. And the reason for that is because if the American government knows anything about this, they know that they would be hurting small businesses, and that is not in their favor. So I don't see this actually getting up, like going anywhere. To me, my focus is truly on making sure that my clients feel supported. I think if anything, best case out of this is that we all need to remember to create an archive of our content and to also be more mindful. You know, I think that more people need to be adopting Amber's strategy of creating one long form and then slicing it up into a ton of different short form. Like, what is a way that you can create a bigger piece and diversify? You know, and I think that that's what we're going to be focusing on a little bit more, you know. So for me, I don't think I'm really going to shift. I'm kind of one of those people, like, I don't cross a bridge until I have to, you know what I mean? Until we get there. So I'll kind of see what happens. But I also am not very sure we're going to have to change that much.
Agree. Amber, what do you think about those points?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm the same kind of person where I'm like, I'll cross that bridge when I get there. And it was actually fascinating. Of course, I learned this in a TikTok. We'll see how it goes. But there is some lawyer and a group of lawyers who are starting to put together a class action lawsuit that if it does get banned, you are literally ripping away income from small business owners. And there's some other law in place that the government is not allowed to do that. So it'll be fascinating to see these communities coming together on TikTok to not have TikTok banned and like going against, you know, like trying to make this thing sustainable. Yes, question.
Could creators unionize?
So there's a lot of talk of that on the platform. I still need to do a lot of my research, so I don't want to just like spit out facts. But yes, there's potential for a unionization of content creators. Again, there's a lot of lawyers trying to do class action lawsuits that we can all buy into and like say, hey, you're ripping away income. It's against the free market in the capitalistic society. And it's beyond censorship at this point. So there's a lot of things moving, a lot of moving pieces there. But yes, I also in agreement that I do not think we will ever get a full ban. And we'll probably see the rise in VPN companies. Like, who knows? You know what I mean? So, yeah.
If I had a bajillion dollars, and I know, Ashley, I told this to you when we were in person. If I had a bajillion dollars, the company I'd invest in right now is Data Insurance.
Absolutely.
I would say I want to pay a company $16.95 a month that their whole job is to back up, archive, tag, and organize every single piece of things I publish on the internet. And that is their whole job. So that when something goes down, or something gets removed, or something happens to one of these platforms that doesn't take my audience from shit to shit to shit, like all over in a Web3 kind of way, that I've got an archive. Like think of Kim Kardashian's closet of every outfit she's ever worn, right? And she can go back, she's like, here's Met Gala 2009, and she can pull it.
Right.
That's what I want. That's what I want. And I think like JT Barnett, I think is his name on TikTok. He does this really well. I think Gary Vee must be doing this, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's content tagging systems and backend systems of organizing all their stuff in a way that they can go pull it whenever they need it and they're not dependent on the platform is so smart. Because I think that, again, like a data insurance company, like I want my digital shit backed up.
So I think it's a fascinating conversation that we'll see kind of unfold. But again, I completely agree with Ashley that I don't think we're going to see a full ban. Truly, it happens every year. This one was just different because we have like so much bipartisan support and it got pushed through really quickly. I'm like, but the thing that a lot of people don't realize, and you can fact check me because I know you have notes pulled up, Michelle, but even if they sell the company, they have 6 months to sell it or something like that. That puts us right at election time.
Yeah.
Listen, our government is stupid sometimes, but they're not that stupid to make sure that we have this big upheaval and this big roar right before we have to elect a new president potentially or whatever this looks like. Come election time, they're not that dumb. So I don't think we'll see a ban. If we do, I don't think it'll happen till at least next year.
And it's a perfectly generational issue. This is exactly where young people don't feel heard. This is exactly where the boomers are like, well, stop playing on your phone all day. And I think honestly, boomers and Gen X are salty that their employees are quitting in record numbers because the corporate workplace does not serve them and they can be happier, more fulfilled, more successful, more autonomous, running their own companies, running their own brands, even if it's harder than they are as a 9-to-5 employee. And I think that that is coming still as a after effect of COVID and lockdown and people and employers saying, nope, I want butts in seats. And I think young people are saying, no, that doesn't work for me.
On top of the fact that like, we need more people in their 30s in office.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like we need like a 40-year-old president. We need like, you know, and the other thing, and like, this is where I don't want to get too in the weeds again. I can't really speak at length about it without maybe misspeaking, but like sometimes things will pass in the Senate bipartisanly because they don't care to really take a stance and they'll let it fail somewhere else. Like, that's where I'm just like, let's just see, you know, that's also how I take the Kate Middleton thing. Maybe she had surgery. You know what I mean? Like, let's just see.
Maybe she's on the beach in Bora Bora. Let's see.
What happens, you know? Like, that's just how I operate.
So true.
Infuriating nonetheless.
It is. And it's also one of the things of I'm glad we can have these kind of conversations like we touched on earlier, because I think this just kind of brings the temperature down and makes people feel a little bit more like, okay, so even the people that do this for a living and help people with social media, there's still not a clear, this is how this is going to go kind of path. And you have to be a little bit more agile and you have to think on your feet. But the core tenets of marketing and business building are the same. It's like Ashley said, the house you rent versus the house you own. It's double down on your message, figure out your core values, your mission, your vision, how you serve people. Let's talk, just kind of close out of where we think kind of brands and marketing experiences is what I'll call it, is going kind of through the end of this year and into the next few years as kind of a social media predictions, because I feel that we are definitely craving more in-person stuff still after COVID. And I think that retreats, conferences, in-person experiences of podcasts and web shows and community gathering in person is still feels like a little bit of a Wild West moment. Ashley, you're nodding along.
Yeah, I really believe in that idea of sell local, market global. And, you know, something that we really stand by at Team AP Consulting, one of the businesses, you know, our membership for entrepreneurs, is we really focused on like, how can we serve like the 30 people who've been with us since day one? And as their business evolves, so has our platform. And other people are welcome, but we still kind of serve this core now, maybe like 75 people. And everything is about them. And those are the people that we're asking, what do you want next? What are you worried about? What are you stressed about? How well do you know an email, or how much do you need there? Like, what kind of this do you need? And so how do we take that infrastructure and put it into an in-person? So something that we're testing and something that we're playing with is a bit of these like outposts in different states, where it's like, could we have a doers meetup in Atlanta every month, and a doers meetup in New York every month, and in Denver every month? But on top of that, if you're a brand, or if you're a business who is trying to build community, I would not necessarily aim to please everybody or to even talk to everybody. Can you get 15 people together who love your business, put them in a focus group, give them free product, give them discounts, make them affiliates with a 75% kickback because you're not going to lose that much money, and really serve those people and have them kind of be like guiding almost as like an honorary board seat of like early adopters? Because a lot of the growth that we see happening on TikTok is really someone talking to someone, and a lot of people saying, I like that, and just making the same thing over and over and over again. A lot of people are just making TV shows, you know, and you're getting the same content every time you log on to that channel of theirs. So how can we adopt that into an in-person realm? You know, and to me, I think it's not conferences. I don't think it's summits. I don't think it's, you know, big events. I think it's happy hours with 15 people and brunch with 6 people and that kind of thing, because the depth of those relationships is going to be something that permeates in a bigger way, but your focus is on small.
Agree. Amber, thoughts to add?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of those points 120%. And I think it's kind of fascinating, at least in my space. So I predominantly work with small creative business owners. And I've started to see interesting things in products and how we market our products online. People are feeling overwhelmed with like these low ticket memberships, feeling overwhelmed with digital products and courses. And people are craving that in-person, either coaching, even if it's digitally for now, but we are craving those touch points outside of social media. And what I predict happening, especially, let's say worst case scenario, TikTok gets banned. I have almost 200,000 people there. That is overwhelming sometimes. And I'm like, I'd rather connect with the 1,000 people that are consistently talking to me, messaging with me, commenting. I'm like, I see us maybe shifting the focus back to those smaller followings and not needing this exponential growth and things like that. I know I miss it sometimes. I'm like, I can't always get to all my DMs. And that's the time and things that I crave the most out of my community. And I'm sure my community is craving out of me. So I actually see a shift towards, we're going to want smaller. Smaller is better. That's just my prediction. It's a little wild, but that's where kind of where I'm at. Yeah.
I agree.
Oh, I would be so happy if follower numbers went away completely.
Yes.
Like if you couldn't see how many followers anyone has, because then it's more about what's the quality of the content? What's the connection piece here? Wilson has something to say about that.
He's got opinions and I don't disagree with him.
I know. But to that point, exactly. Smaller, the better. I've had so much success just hosting a community coffee. Free. I'm covering the snacks. Just make a donation to a local nonprofit. Come by and mix and match. And I had friends who were like, oh, I work a 9-to-5 job. Can I still come? I was like, of course. It's just community coffee. Like, just come and chit chat with people. I know that you guys have things in common. I know I can connect you guys, because I think all of us are master connectors as well. I was like, oh, you should talk to so-and-so and you guys have this in common, or you both enjoy yoga or whatever it is, right? Like you can find those threads, because I think people want to feel seen and heard and they want connection. But they also want an opportunity to meet people that there's just that understanding, like that we like the same things. Like I went to a live taping of Ride, the podcast. Do you guys follow Benito Skinner?
Yeah.
Benny Drama 7. His podcast, the live show. My goodness, I've never met more friendly people in my entire life. And it like the other criteria of who they were so inconsequential to the fact that we all enjoyed these inside jokes together, to your point, Ashley, right? Like creating community, creating those inside jokes. So I think that's on the horizon. Need not to fret, everybody. But, you know, when Kiss My Aesthetic goes on our little countrywide tour, we'll have to make stops in each of your cities. Amazing. Well, where can everyone find you, follow you, connect with you? If they have questions about this stuff, I know you guys have both posted some things here and there, whether on stories or reels or even on TikTok, like helpful pieces for the content marketers that are listening. Ashley, where can we find and follow you?
Yeah, you should probably follow me. The majority of what we do is at Team AP Consulting, which is our entrepreneurship membership. So just at Team AP Consulting, or you can follow the marketing agency at Dial Zero Marketing.
Amazing. Amber, take it away.
Yeah, you guys can find me literally on all major social media platforms except for X. I'm sorry, I left Twitter a long time ago.
Fair enough.
Find me at Amber Figlow. And I do want to plug one free resource that I have.
Please.
I do have an Airtable content planner that's going to help you archive
all
these posts. And it's totally free. So you guys head to my website. I'll probably give you the link in the show notes too. Take that resource, start downloading your TikToks and archive them somewhere. So I just want to plug that real quick. That's okay.
God, I love Airtable. You're my new best friend.
Okay, first of all, I need that. I need that like yesterday. So if you'll please also share it in the Facebook group, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, yeah, thank you both ladies so much for coming on. This was really helpful. And hopefully if everyone listening got some good insights out of this, I already know that we need to clip that thing about it being like trying to make the women quiet, because that just makes my blood boil when you were sharing that with us, Ashley, because I think you're really onto something. So I appreciate both of you so much. Thank you so much for coming on today in this emergency.
Thanks for organizing this.
Yes.
My pleasure. My pleasure, guys. Thanks so much. And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for the Kiss My Aesthetic podcast. Don't forget to follow along and leave us a review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll see you in the Kiss My Aesthetic Facebook group for years and years of behind the scenes content and over 5,000 connections with fellow creatives. For show notes from today's episode, please visit mkwcreative.co/podcast. This episode was edited by Berta Wired, and theme music comes from Eliza Vera and Nathan Menard. Catch you next time.